to a special MacCorp podcast where we'll interview Tim Harrison, the CEO of Ionic Rare Earths, and we'll learn some valuable insights into both the project, the company, and its people. So I'll start with welcoming Tim. Welcome to the MacCorp podcast, and thanks for joining us, Tim.
Thanks, Steve. Thanks for having me. Look forward to having a chat about Ionic and our project.
Fantastic. Why don't we start with just telling us a little bit about Ionic and why it's chosen rare earths, and just to give our listeners some insights, where that decision came from.
Okay, so the company was previously called Oro Verde Limited. And was looking for a project in the rare earth space across the globe, and identified an opportunity with an ionic clay in Uganda. Now, the attraction of ionic clays is principally the very simple processing nature and the high value product. That is,
which obviously is a lot more cost effective in getting the resource itself.
That's right. So typically an ionic clay near surface clay mineralization, whereby the rare earths have weathered from the surrounding granites and deposited in a chemical form within the clay. They are adsorbed onto the clay. And so there's no rare earth mineralization that we're having to firstly pre-concentrate and then try and crack. We're simply just washing the clay with a salt solution. From a chemistry perspective, the process is called desorption. And so the ionically bonded rare earths are desorbed from the clay into solution. And then we can just precipitate them very simply and make a high-value product without many of the negative attributes of some of the other rare earth mineralized minerals that I suppose provide the bulk of rare earth production at the present time.
Now, as far as the clay deposits, are there many in the world?
There's a number of clay deposits in southern China. The ionic clays have been processed for probably around about 50 years in southern China, and that has given the Chinese a significant strategic advantage because they've been able to build a rare earth industry, and predominantly a heavy rare earth industry, off the back of these ionic clay deposits.
And control it.
That's exactly right. So roughly about 95%, or maybe 97% of current heavy rare earth production comes from China. And of that, about 95% of those heavies emanates from the ionic clays. Over the course of the last 50 years, the Chinese have been processing these deposits. And it hasn't been regulated until probably about 10 to 15 years ago. So they've depleted a lot of their ionic clay resources. Outside of China, there's a couple of other ionic clays that we're well aware of, and that's in Brazil, Cerro Verde, and in Chile, Bio Lantanidos.
Okay, excellent. Now, as far as the project ownership, where are you at with that now?
So presently, Ionic is in an earn-in arrangement with our African partners. We're at 31% holding of Rwenzori Rare Metals, which is the holding company that owns the Makuutu deposit. We're working through a staged earn-in up to 60%. And based on the work plan that we have in front of us, we will be at 51% by the end of this year, and then up to 60% on the back of a completed feasibility study, which will be, over the course of the next couple of years, once we complete the scoping study later this year.
Excellent, fantastic. Can you tell us a little bit about the people within the company, including yourself, Tim?
Yeah, so look, I've been with Ionic now since February. I came on to manage the Makuutu Rare Earth Project. My background, I'm a metallurgist, chemical engineer. I've got 20 years in the mining industry working with both resource and EPCM companies. My focus has principally been around copper, gold, uranium, nickel, cobalt, done a bit of work in scandium and rare earths. So my experience is more around the project development, flow sheets, early stages of projects, and then taking them through to through the various stages of project definition, and then
that just sounds like managing the whole process, Tim.
Sorry, what was that, Steve?
It sounds like you're just managing the whole thing.
Yeah, look, it's a great project in that coming on early means there's a great opportunity to shape the direction of the project and make sure that the right work is done at the right time, and to leverage off the expertise of the team. So in addition to myself, we've got Jeff Chapman, who's our resource geologist, geological consultant. So I'm working closely with Jeff at the moment on building up a pretty solid understanding of the deposit. That's on the back of a lot of the work that's been done by our partners in Uganda over the course of the last 7 years. So our partners have been working on this project since it was first identified in 2012. And the skill set that Ionic is bringing to the project is more around the execution of taking something from a discovery now to an evaluation, and ultimately we want to take this to a development decision and to production.
Sounds exciting. Lots happening. Now, obviously we're in a unusual circumstance now with COVID-19. How has that affected Ionic?
So with the we were obliged, I think, to postpone activities in Uganda once the COVID restrictions were put in place. I mean, our principal focus was on making sure that, one, our staff and our local community stakeholders were safe. So we postponed the drill program. We'd started a drilling program. We'd had to terminate or to postpone that program after only 240 metres of drilling. In the 3 months post that decision, we've taken that time to go over a lot of the information that we had been collecting over the course of the 9 months since project acquisition in July of last year. We've taken the time to go back and review the data and also incorporate the new 240 metres of drilling. Included in that was some a portion of infill drilling. And we're able to, I suppose, have a look at the fundamentals of the project, the resource inputs. And we recently announced a significant upgrade to the mineral resource estimate. So we've tried to take the time and utilise it in places where we believe it will unlock value, and also set a runway for us to launch into the next 12 to 18 months of project development activities.
So even during this no quiet times, Tim?
No, I think we've looked to try and make sure that when things opened up, as they're always going to do, that we were ready to move with purpose into the field and to make sure that we are doing the work that's going to unlock value.
And just confirm, drilling's commenced now back on the project?
That's right. So we resumed drilling Monday the 13th of July. We've got a second rig that's planning on mobilising to site next week. So the week of the week of the 20th of July. And then effectively we should have two rigs spinning on site by the following week. The plan is to drill the remaining 3,700 metres of that program, 3,760 metres. And that will enable us to test, complete some more infill drilling to better test the rest of the Makutu Central Zone.
Yeah.
And then we're also going to be doing resource extension drilling on the Makutu Eastern and Western tenements. And the combined, I suppose, expanse of the mineralisation sort of covers around about 26 kilometres from end to end of what we're aware of. So we're very keen to go and test the full extremes of that 26 kilometres and grow the resource substantially. We'll get that information in, and hopefully by bringing that second rig in, we'll expedite a potential upgrade in the resource before the end of the year.
Excellent. That's exciting. Very exciting. Now, one of the things that mining companies struggle with is funding. Now, look at, say, just over the last 12 months, you spent just over $1.8 million in the company, with majority of it going on the project, which was about $1.2 million, and then, you know, approximately $600K on staff and admin. So you're definitely project-focused looking at the finance. Now, talking about finance, how are you funded over the next sort of 12 to 24 months with the project?
Yeah, so look, Steve, we've just completed a placement, a capital raise, and we're getting towards the tail end of an SPP, which is due to close on the 22nd of July. All up, that'll probably give us the best part of $3.5 million in the bank, which is certainly more than enough for us to go and lay a huge amount of groundwork. So we'll complete the scoping study, we'll complete the next drill program, and effectively put ourselves in a position to start the next phase of project development. So pending what I expect will be a very favourable scoping study outcome, we'll be then moving swiftly into a feasibility study and other activities to expedite project development.
Excellent, fantastic. Now, I just want to look at the company shareholding and ownership. Can we talk about, you know, the top 20 and the director's shareholding? Can you give me a bit of insight to that?
Yeah, look, so on the back of the last raise, where things stand right now is that our major shareholders hold about 17% of the business, Ivonic Rare Earths, and our executives, directors and key advisors, they also hold about the same amount, so about 17% also. So we've got a reasonably tight held significant portion of the business that's in it for the long term.
Excellent. And why should investors that are looking at your company consider investing in Ionic?
Well, I think what we've seen on the back of COVID is certainly the world has become a lot more sensitive and aware of supply chains, of the dominance that the Chinese have in many industries, and rare earths is certainly no different. It's the Chinese dominance in the rare earth supply chain is, I don't know how to put a word on it, it's almost complete. So the world has there's been a lot of discussion around diversifying supply. Even recently in the papers, there's been commentary about, I think I read yesterday, a document or an article whereby the Chinese were going to limit sale of rare earths to Lockheed Martin on the back of Lockheed supplying a defense system to Taiwan. So in the current world where one country has so much influence and dominance over an industry, the ability to produce and provide an alternative, stable supply of heavy rare earths is hugely attractive. The investment in rare earths, and there's a lot of alternative rare earth players out there who have been in the game trying to fund their projects, are looking at producing...
Just on that, Tim, because that's an interesting point. You know, I've been following a few companies for quite some time, and what I have noticed that some of these projects they've had for 10, 15 plus years, and you know, they're still managing the project and they're not in production yet.
That's right. And my take on that is that they're making a, for want of a better term, it's a Me Too product. They're making a product, a light rare earth concentrate, which in reality is in excess supply. And the Chinese dominate that as well. If the Chinese want to increase their quotas, it's very easy for them to go and increase production of rare earths from their large rare earth producing sites, Bayan Obo, Sichuan and Shandong in China. So bringing another light rare earth mineral project onto the market, it's a Me Too product. What the world needs is more heavy rare earths. And given that the Chinese have depleted their ionic clays in southern China, the attraction of bringing diversified supply of heavy rare earths to the market via an ionic clay like Makuutu is profound. It does de-risk the supply chain. It diversifies certainly the focus away from that Chinese monopoly on heavy rare earths.
I think it's good for the global economy in general. Anything that stops any country dominating or controlling is a good thing. Now, just before we finish off, Tim, can you just give us a quick overview of why rare earths is important to us?
Well, I suppose if we look at the application of rare earths and the push towards green energy, for example, so renewable energy, the use of wind power. Wind power is being effectively enabled and better efficiencies are being driven by the adoption of high-intensity permanent magnets. Those permanent magnets are being developed with rare earths, with the critical rare earths. If we look at permanent magnets and the support of building an electric vehicle industry, again, permanent magnets, so critical rare earths. The application of, let's, for example, look at 5G technology and communications. It's all enabled by rare earths. The use of erbium fiber-doped amplifiers is effectively enabled by rare earths.
So we know.
I think what we're doing is the more work we've done as a society, we're looking at what we can improve. Rare earths are basically at the forefront of being able to better utilize our resources and to do things in a smarter way. So by bringing on a supply, an alternative supply of heavy rare earths and being able to, I suppose, take the supply dominance away from China means that utilizing a more diverse supply chain will enable probably a greater adoption of these technologies in the future.
A lot of opportunities.
Yeah, look, it's a huge amount of opportunity, but it's really defined by what's in the ground. And with that, we've got a very, very solid project with Makuutu, and the more work we do, the better it becomes.
And just as important as a project potential is its people, and, you know, you've given us some good insight, you've got all the experience to manage and progress this project. So that's great news, and thank you for all the education you've provided us and insights into your project today.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Steve. And look forward to the journey for the next 26 months, I suppose, until we sort of hopefully get a development decision.
Well, I look forward to watching on the sidelines and seeing you progress it.
Brilliant. Thank you, Steve.
Excellent. Thanks for your time, Tim. So that now concludes our special podcast with our interview with Tim from Ionic Rare Earths. And thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good day.